This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com and StrengthCoach.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 138. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and with me this week we have Jonathan Fass, Dr. Jonathan Fass. I'm going to try to get that right. Jonathan, the doctor is in. What's up?
Everything's going well, Kevin.
And we can find John at acceleratedstrength.com. Don't go to his blog. The next website, our next person that we have on the show is Lee Peel of the appropriately named LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee?
Not only a person, I'm a website.
Exactly.
That is how huge I am. How huge?
How huge?
I ordered more t-shirts. It's the best way I'm going to get into that discussion.
Good segue.
Yeah, we ran out of smalls, and we had
Tony ordered them all.
Yeah.
Tony kept all the smalls and the XXXSs. And so we don't have any more small t-shirts or medium t-shirts. All we had left was large, so I ordered 50 more t-shirts. If you're one of the few that still needed a small t-shirt or a medium, I also ordered some XXL. And we had one request for an XXXL, but at this point, I'm not going to order a bunch of them because I only one person asked for them. But if we get a couple requests, I'll order them in the next batch. So if you want to get in on those, just email me at kevin@thefitcast.com and I'll give you the details on how to order them. They are $20 and I will ship them anywhere in the United States free. If they're going outside of the United States, it's $8 extra to get it out to you. That just puts it right in the sweet spot, depending on where I have to send it. Some places are a little bit more expensive than others. That's just a general guideline, and I can't sit at a computer and calculate shipping costs for every t-shirt. So that's how we're going to do it. And they are fantastic quality t-shirts. I think, obviously, we have about 40 of them out there right now, and people are wearing them. I have a couple pictures that I've been sent from listeners of the show that I'm going to probably put up on the website this week. But the, they're good t-shirts. I don't know if anything like the claims of adding 50 pounds to your bench press and 300 pounds to your deadlift are true, but.
But your social worth will go up.
Yeah.
And here's my quick story. So my best friend is a speech-language pathologist. She had to go into the high school in her school district one day. I think it was like her off day, and she was just headed in. She was wearing her FitCast t-shirt, and she was walking through the halls, and two or three of the high school kids were walking past her, and she distinctly heard one of them go, "Whoa, she's wearing a FitCast t-shirt." I thought that was pretty cool.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
We were recognized.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So see, social standings with the high school scene will go up immensely.
Is that market penetration? Is that what it's called?
I think like so. That?
Nice.
The doctor is in.
Doctor is in. So if you want to order a t-shirt and then spread the love, and also we will give one away to our Pink Dumbbell Award winner for this week as well. If you did order a t-shirt in the last couple of weeks, they just got sent out yesterday, so you should be getting them sometime this week. Crossing fingers. Next up, I'm still doing stuff at destinationabs.com, and people did not like that I picked Summer Glau as the motivation pick for this past week. I got a lot of flack for that. Most women think I should be picking females who look like they could bench press 150 pounds or deadlift 300 pounds, but
Moon Bloodgood
will be this upcoming week's motivation. And the thing I had to defend her is that she was a professional. Like, she did ballerina dancing, so she kind of had to be that size. At least that's what I'm guessing. I'm no dance expert. I'll throw it off to Lee, but I'm guessing that that would be the case. It wouldn't make sense for her to be big and bulky if she's a ballerina and she's going to be tossed up in the air.
It's really interesting that you bring up this conversation and discourse about what makes females bulky.
I know, because you had a blog post about it.
Due to my blog post that I have about it.
Nice.
How about that?
How did I do? Did I do right?
That was good. That was really good. I mean,
well, I would like to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of
weird.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk. It's epic. It's everywhere. The feminists on LiveJournal communities hate me. Oh, it's awesome. I don't even know why, but it's fun reading what they write about me.
Can you? Let's talk about this a little bit. So first off, you hit a blog post on LeePeel.com.
Yes, that is the address.
This past week called Defining Bulky Once and for All. What did you write about in that?
It's basically an article, Kevin, that discusses what is considered bulky by the majority population of female women. Particularly female gym goers as the majority. And the results on average were to a lot shocking as any sort of sign of extreme muscle definition or defined shoulders was seen as bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it just discusses how the majority of women don't want to pulled. And that I have seen and trained and talked to do not like a lot of muscle and a lot of defining muscle on their body. And it's a look kind of thing. It's a desired look. There is no right. There is no wrong. But I thought it was an interesting conversation, especially for trainers to be able to have with their trainees. But it led to a really interesting conversation and a lot of links. I mean, it's everywhere. It's backlinked like everywhere. I got contacted for it to be in like a magazine. I mean, it's everywhere. It really hit a nerve and sparked just a lot of conversation. Very interesting. And obviously I'm going to do a follow-up post on it, but it's really fascinating to see how many women, I will say it's fascinating to see how many women came out in defense of the bulky look and how many women, really came out in defense of wanting to have a defined look of muscle. And I think it says a lot too, for a lot of the women that are very active in online communities. I think it's interesting. I think it targets a certain kind of demographic as well. So yeah, it's just interesting all the way around. But, I will say that, the girl Summer, she's very technically proficient and has a lot of strength. It may not show on her body and it may not have been, weight trained strength, but there's a lot of strength there to do the things that she can do.
Well, she did a lot of her own stunts and the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and when she's tossing around big ass dudes, obviously they're on wires and stuff, but you got to be pretty tough and strong to do a lot of those stunts yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just there's different kinds of training for different people. There is no judging. Not everyone has to deadlift, you know. It's just different training, different people. But it's an interesting topic nonetheless.
And do you really think Jessica Biel deadlifts?
She did deadlift, actually.
She did
deadlift. And she did, back weighted squats, weighted lunges.
Because I saw her on, like, Jimmy Kimmel or something like that. She was doing some stupid shit.
It's Jimmy Kimmel.
Not Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, I know. The Jimmy Fallon skit where she's teaching him how to do the training. Yeah, no, I mean, her trainer actually did an article on, was it Figure Athlete? And talked about some of her training, I think. But no, I mean, there's I've seen pictures where she's doing weighted lunges, weighted back squats. Her trainer talked about deadlifts. And she later had to, decrease her muscle for roles that she was taking. And I think now she's training again because she's doing Broadway or something.
Oh, cool.
But actresses, they have to change her look. Jennifer Garner, for example, had to go from Alias to 13 going on 30 and had to decrease her muscle mass because she looked too buff for the kind of role she was going to play. It's just, it's an ongoing topic. I mean, we can get in it forever, but it's interesting.
Nature of the business, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. And yeah, Jessica Biel's hot. The next thing I wanted to quickly talk about is that I By the time that you hear this, I will have KevinLarrabee.com up. It's up right now, but just wanted to give people a heads up that that's just going to be my own personal home base in terms of online personal training and things of that nature. So if you are interested, I'm looking on bringing on one or two more people right now. You can go to KevinLarrabee.com. It's just all one word. And you can check that out. It's kind of sparse right now, but I'm probably going to be blogging a little bit there in the future, doing some short pieces and kind of leaving the FitCast just for the podcast and doing my own personal blogging there. So because I think the FitCast should be its own central thing. That's why I kind of brought Destination Abs to its own website. So the FitCast.com will be more or less strictly for the podcast and any kind of video content that we do for the show. But I will post sometimes I will just do like a weekly update at the FitCast.com saying what's going on at the other websites, or, you know, linking to other blogs that I read during the week. But if people want more of that stuff, they should be following us on Twitter anyways. Because that usually is the best way to pass that stuff along. And John, you're still not on Twitter, huh?
Nope.
I think everyone in the world is. I didn't know it was that big of a thing until I saw that like everyone is on it. Like they talk about it on CNN now.
Yep. Not me.
John, you're just so cool, man. You're like the Fonz of 2009.
Dude, I worked 70 hours last week. I'm not twitting. Tweeting, twatter, whatever.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with the mailbag. It is epically long. We'll see you in a couple seconds.
If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly turbulence training website where you can get a new program every single month.
Welcome to this week's mailbag. The first question that we have comes from Jeff. This one is for Lee. What are your thoughts on pro-hormones like Epistane? Are these safe to use? I am 25, 6'1", 195 pounds, just looking to add some lean mass. Thanks, and love the show. I listen to it every Monday while walking my dog.
There's a few things, I guess, to throw out. One, I think the first and foremost, you're 25 years old. And you're 6'1", 195. There's a great base there. There's a lot of time. You've got some youth on your side. And I really think that some time in the gym, some nutrition, and some effort will do you really, really good. And you'll still reap some benefit from it. I'm just going to throw that out there. I think that it would be really just a waste to try and venture into that area at all. As far as the pro hormones go, my issue with things like the Epistane or, you know, Havoc, which is basically the same thing, is you get minimal payback for the exact same risk of side effects or worse as you would just your full blown steroids. So I think that it's just a waste of time. I think it's a waste of time. I'm not saying if you're going to do it, just go hard and do it. But it kind of reminds me of back in the day when they came out with those like fake ecstasy pills that they used to sell at like those shops where you'd buy like, you know, bowls and things like that. And I knew all these people that would like get them and they'd, you know, they'd just pop them in like one after the other. And it just ended up either killing people or making them really sick and giving them a very mild, mild effect of along those lines. And I think it's just kind of like that same thing. I mean, there's all the side effects, half if even less of the benefit. I just don't think that it's worth it. At least the real stuff is researched and studied on a higher level, and you're going to have more of a base of information about it. So I'm not saying that I'm recommending it. I'm not saying to recommend doing it. I personally preach more of a natural lifestyle, and I want to always say that. But that being said, if you're going to mess with any of that, I think go with something that's well researched, something that we know what it's going to do to you, and then weigh that decision properly. But as it stands, you're 25. I say get in the gym, lift, and eat, and really look at the goals and what you want, because chances are what you want can be achieved without the use of drugs at all. Just a lot of hard work. So that's that on that.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. this is to John. Hey, guys. I was wondering how much creatine I should be. Oh, just kidding. Seriously, I have a question about deadlifting. I've been doing rack pulls for the past 18 months thanks to Tony Gentilcore's Fitcast Insider interview, and it's been a tremendous help to my strength and fitness. I've been pulling from just below the knees and recently reached my goal of 400 plus pounds. On occasion, I'll pull from the floor, and my max deadlift is around 350. I'm getting to a 3 times a week, and one of those sessions is devoted to deadlifting. If my goal is to get to 4 or 5 from the floor, should I continue to do both rack pulls and conventional deadlifting? Thanks for the help, Kevin Fay.
Well, really, we have to look at what you're using any of these exercises for. And when you look at something like a rack pull, that would generally be an accessory lift to the actual conventional deadlift from the floor. So it's kind of like a deadlift would be an accessory lift to an Olympic lifter to get the cleanup or a snatch. But for like a power lifter where the deadlift is the focus, then things like rack pulls and cable pull throughs and pin lifts to the pins and things like that, those are all accessory lifts for your deadlifts. So if we look at it in that sense, chances are your weak point is not in a rack pull in the point to lock out at this point, because you've been doing it for over a year and a half. My suggestion, most likely you should start to look a little bit more about your power off the floor. You could include some speed training in there if you haven't done that already, because there may be an issue of your actual speed and ability to take the weight from a dead position off the floor. Cable pull throughs and pulls to pins, so you're getting that first quarter to half range motion. That's probably where your weakness is. But otherwise, it's just really just a matter of analyzing yourself. What's preventing you from getting that 400 pounds? Are you finding that one position in the range of motion is a little bit harder than the other position? And then just train that movement. And that's the idea of accessory lifting. So if you're deadlifting once a week and you're working out 3 times a week, you could consider bumping that up to twice a week, not necessarily the same type of max effort deadlifting. You could go into speed lifting, or you could hammer a little bit more in terms of accessory lifts, but have it deadlift related. And then I would assume that third time is something like a squat or a unilateral movement. But that's probably where you're going to find your best stuff. Next question is from Rob. And Rob says, "Hello, Fitcast crew. Just finished episode 135. I hope you like off topic, and I just about busted my gut laughing. Kevin, when you hung up on Jonathan, I just about died. And you know what? For the record, my heart just about died when you hung up on me, Kevin. That was great. Thanks for making my day." That's been a really popular episode.
I was so worried that was going to be really
like the
bad.
Worst thing ever. Yeah, I mean, it almost begs the question, why are we even answering questions anymore?
I know, right? What are we even doing answering questions?
We should just do an off topic show about nothing.
Yeah, it's the off-topic show with three guys and girls that like stuff, but who cares? My question
just
is about
call me a dude.
Strength.
You just called me a dude.
Three guys, hey, guys, like in the plural, like hey guys.
Yeah.
But I did kind of add that.
Yeah.
Although sometimes Kevin and Tony have been questioned for their likes and tastes. So.
This is true, especially when watching movies together.
Yep. My question is about grip strength. I've started deadlifting, just bought the new rules of lifting and love it so far, but I'm finding my fingers peeling off the bar as I increase the weight. What can I do to improve my grip strength? And that was from Rob. Kevin, what you got?
Well, it's going to be a kind of a common issue, especially for those that are just starting out and they're finding their strength increase faster than they can actually hold on to the weight. So obviously the first thing that you should do is try if your facility or your club allows you to use some use some chalk. Chalk is going to help you get a better grip, and you know it's going to allow you to hold on to the weight a little bit easier, and it's going to help you work in that forearm strength. And a great alternative if you can't use chalk are these things called Lynx grips. It's LYNX, and you can buy them for like $10 online, and they look like I think Eric's fiance made it the best term for them. They look kind of look like lifting tacos that you put in your palms, and you just basically put them in your palms, and they help you get a better grip. They're basically just thin sheets of rubber that are more or less look like ovals that fit pretty well in your palm. Those are going to be good in terms of just helping you hold on to the bar, dumbbells, depending on what you're using. But the there's a couple things you can do in terms of exercises to improve your grip strength as well. And one of them being towel pull-ups. That's something that obviously you're going to have to be capable of doing pull-ups to start off with. But basically just throwing a towel over like the neutral grip bars of a power rack or a pull-up bar, and just holding on to the opposite ends of the towel and doing pull-ups of that. Another thing is farmer's walks, where you can do it. You can make them as easy or as complicated as you want them to be. But you can generally what you can use is just simply dumbbells. You can use heavy dumbbells, and you're just walking a distance. You can make it 20 yards, or you can make it 10 yards. You're basically just holding on to those dumbbells and forcing yourself to improve your grip strength through that. John, you can't send messages while we're doing this thing. Now I have to mute this. Okay. And I'm gonna continue with the answer, John. And the farmer's walks, like I said, you can make them as complicated or as easy as you want. There's also special bars that you can buy that are like 15 pounds, where you can throw plates on the opposite ends of them. Force you to balance them out a little bit more too. And last but not least, is using something like a fat bar, which you can get from places like Elite FTS. You can use it for benching. You can use it for rowing. It's got, I think it's like 4 times the width or circumference of a normal barbell. So you're forced to work on grip strength with that. You can use it for benching, rowing, even deadlifting if you want. It's going to make it a little bit tougher, especially when it comes to, the bar being that much closer to your shins. But, those are a couple things you want to try out. And if you need to sneak chalk into the gym, just bring it in a Tupperware container. It seems to have worked pretty well for me so far. But I think that's kind of all I got, unless John or Lee, you have anything else to add to that?
No. Just keep working. Just like what you said, keep hammering away on grip strength. I'm not a huge lover of straps for people that aren't necessarily competing. That's just personal.
Pretty much why I omitted them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just kind of feel like if you're just working out for general fitness and strength and whatever, then hammer away at the weakest link, which is oftentimes the grip. But it's just a personal opinion. I mean, I don't think that I could claim anything bad from straps, but whatever.
Well, what you're doing there is you're basically compensating. You're compensating for a weak grip by using the straps. You're not helping really improve your grip. You're just making it so you can lift more weight, which, in the case is what you're trying to accomplish if grip strength isn't number one priority. But
the question then, it begs the question, though, is that a functional grip strength? I mean, do you need to use a grip that is appropriate for a bar diameter, piece of equipment when most things kind of aren't necessarily? But again, I mean, that's the only reason why I would say it probably doesn't matter. But I mean, and you could, I guess we can make arguments about, compression of the wrist with straps, but I don't really think it's that big of a deal. But I personally do agree with you. I just don't really have any true evidence to suggest that that's a correct answer. It's just more of like a, why not,
mm-hmm.
Type of answer. It's like, oh, why shouldn't I use grip, like grips or whatever. And it's like, well, why bother? If you're trying to get stronger, then get stronger.
Yeah. But, gotcha. Let's jump into the next question that we have for Lee. This question may, and it's from Dan. This question may be a bit closer to, quote, core fitness than you're used to, be warned. Throughout my life, I've had somewhat of a weak stomach to date. If I have a meal that's especially greasy and or spicy, said meal seems to sneak out the back way sooner than other things I might eat. After a greasy hamburger, it's not uncommon to re-witness the same food stuff fleeing the body in a somewhat reconstituted state within, no joke, 20 minutes. My question is this: what happens to all the calories and nutrients I consumed in this scenario? Do I absorb what I, quote, what I need from these foods before sending them into the public infrastructure, or am I missing out? If I'm keeping track of my calories and something I eat catches the early train as described above, how should I record these calories? If I consume something useful like fish oil in the same meal, is it subsumed and spirited away in the same colonoscopic sting operation? It's great, all these metaphors that he uses for crapping. Any backup information you could offer here would be much appreciated, Dan.
Bonus points to Dan for that statement. You know, it's tricky when you get into situations like this because the digestion track is so full of so many different things, and there's so many different processes from the beginning to the end, literally. Like, there's so many things that go down where your little kink in your chain can be. It would be hard to say, even just based on what you put. I will say that it does seem like that you're having some absorption issues. And there's another little thing to throw in here. A lot of times when people have a hard time absorbing things and when they have weak digestive systems, a lot of the times it starts in the mouth and their actual chewing. You'd be amazed how many studies show that increased chewing helps with failed digestion processes in the body. So I know it seems an overly simplistic answer, but if you can see what it is that you ate to some degree on a large level, then it means that you're not chewing it very good either. So really, 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 really chew your food if you have weak digestion. Don't shove it in, you know, like you're a fireman off to go save somebody. Just really, really chew. And you might find that helps on a larger degree than you anticipated. If you find yourself finishing a meal in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes top, which I personally am a very fast eater. I have to like force myself to chew. And because I grew up in like a household, it's like, get your food or, you know, you're not going to get it kind of thing. So, you know, so I understand that kind of mentality, but really, really chew your food. And that will help just right there alone. If you're absorbing and if you're not absorbing it, the calorie issues and stuff like that, I couldn't tell you. And there's no way in trying to come up with any sort of measurement for that. And I think that you're just going to have to kind of, you know, let that go as much as possible. It seems like that you're having issues with absorbing fat and that you're having issues with that because it's basically greasing you and like, you know, flying right out almost in a Lester Chip manner. So what I would try and do is I would try and, you know, pair your meals, keep them a little bit smaller. You know, I don't usually, I'm not very, dogmatic about any sort of like meal timing or how many meals you're supposed to eat in a day, but usually those with digestive issues do benefit from eating smaller meals throughout the day. It's just easier on them. So eat smaller meals at a time. Try not to, you know, stuff yourself in you know, one or two big meals in a night. Maybe break them up into three. And when you do so, eat some things that maybe, you know, help aid with absorption and digestion a little bit more. Make sure they're getting fiber. Add some enzymes into your diet, maybe even, you know, some probiotics and just kind of see how it goes. You can try adding some glutamine into the diet. I discussed I think in the last or the previous episode about, you know, basically some gut issues and gut health issues. It's all kind of the same thing. And you kind of have to try it all because you never really know what's going to help what. you know, and this is, of course, beyond going to, you know, the doctor and checking it out. And I don't usually go there a lot and say that because I stupidly assume that people automatically have already done that or are doing that or are using this in kind of a cross. If you're having severe issues with absorption or you think that you're really not absorbing your food or you're getting sick on any sort of level, if you're losing weight or anything like that, then you need to go to a doctor and you need to get it checked out, of course. But if it's just, you know, you're having these kind of weird occurrences and every once in a while you kind of eat something and then kind of torpedo it out. Well, what did you eat? How much fat was it? You know, what was kind of surrounding the meal in it, and can you break that meal into smaller segments and maybe pair it with more, you know, carbohydrates and protein at a time to give a little bit more of a mixture in your digestion. So I know it's a little bit of an all over the place answer, but it's because it's a really hard thing to identify in the first place. So if you're losing any weight, if you're getting, you know, really sick, if you have any noticeable vitamin deficiencies or anything on of that, you know, like, for example, if you're not absorbing fat very well, your hair might be brittle, your nails might be brittle, you might have issues with your skin, you know, it might be a little bit dry, things like that, then you might have issue with absorbing fat. You might need to go to the doctor and get that checked out. So hopefully that answers the question. But good luck with that, Dan. So, John.
Yeah.
Love the show. You guys always give really great answers and keep it interesting for gym goers of all experience levels. I have a question regarding creatine. I do 3 full body workouts a week and aim to increase mass and improve my bench, squat, and deadlift. I'm taking just under 10 grams of creatine monohydrate on each of my workout days, but none of the days where I don't hit the weights. Is this detrimental to my gains, and will taking it out on the days that I only go to the gym render the effects ineffective? Creatine can be expensive when bought continuously and am unsure how to proceed. I have also heard that creatine can be harmful to your kidneys. Is there any facts behind these statements? Also, like Kevin, love to bench. I have heard you guys saying recently on the show that you shouldn't bench more than 3 times a week. Could you please clarify as to why on my current plan, because I bench each of my sessions 3 times a week. I'm 22 years old, around 5'10", 11, I'll bet overweight, but quite fit and active for someone my size. Keep up the good work. Thanks for your help. I see no name.
Oh, I see no name. Yep. Creatine loading.
Anonymous.
Anonymous. Creatine is, it's the same kind of thing, I mean, in some ways as eating, right? So although some people might choose to change their calories based on whether they're working out that day or not, you wouldn't not eat that day if you weren't working out. Same thing kind of occurs with creatine, and Lee, please jump in if I'm garbling any information because it's been years since I've looked at creatine stuff. But basically you need to the idea of creatine is that you are increasing your natural stores of creatine in the cellular structure so that you have that at your disposal when you're exercising. So going days on and days off is going to kind of undo the effort that you're making with taking in creatine on the days that you're exercising. And I don't believe, again, Lee, correct me, but I don't believe that eating creatine, you know, ingesting creatine that day does not help you with your workout for that day. It's because of this process of building up your natural stores. It's, you know, having creatine on Monday might help you on Friday. I mean, it's not
absolutely
something like that.
Yeah.
Day.
It's not a direct effect kind of thing. No.
Right. So my suggestion is just taking it naturally, normally, just like you would vitamins or fish oil or any other supplement like that. And it's not like a protein supplement either, where you say, well, if I worked out today, then maybe I'll be taking my protein supplement after I work out. It's just something that you take along with your vitamins and everything else if you're going to use creatine. As far as bench pressing, that's just as, you know, overdoing anything is not going to be good for you. We bust on Kevin here because it's like his favorite exercise in the whole world. But
well, I think I don't know if he's kind of mistaken. I don't know if he means barbell benching or if he's doing some kind of, you know, pectoral exercise. Like he could be doing dumbbell benching, incline mm-hmm. dumbbell benching on separate days. And
right. Yeah, I mean, bench pressing is
Monday,
just
on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I don't think that's what he's doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just you just need to give your body an opportunity to rest and rebuild. We build muscle on our rest, not in the gym. The gym gives us the stimulus. The rest and the recovery gives us the muscle and the strength. So so benching more than three times a week is just going to mean that you're not giving your body ample time to rest, and you're going to basically eventually either do more harm than good, depending on how intense you're going, or at least limit your results because you were not not kind of following what the research and the years and years and years and years of experience show us. Anything else, guys?
Score.
Okay.
You know what? Actually, real quick, creatine shouldn't be that expensive.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw. I meant to mention that creatine shouldn't be that expensive. You can get a big old tub of creatine monohydrate. And it really shouldn't be that expensive. And 10 grams might even be a little high. You're definitely going to hit saturation at 5 grams every day after a month. So I'd say lower the to 5 grams if you want. I mean, you can use 10, but I don't really see the point. But lower the grams to 5. And if you're buying expensive creatine, that's some sort of crazy special souped up supplement advertising thing. Don't
Power
just get
Max.
Just get a simple creatine monohydrate. Good to go. It should last you for a really long time because it is not expensive. It shouldn't be expensive. So just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah. Don't buy a super pump. I just want to say that because I know someone that buys super pump and I'm like, just buy creatine. I'm like, no, I need super pump. No, you don't. It sucks. Sorry, people can hear that, my door keeps opening and closing because there's a hurricane outside and I have my windows open. So there's a huge change in pressure in my room. So it keeps
forcing it's raining outside.
Yeah, it's been raining in Massachusetts for like the last 3 months.
But I was just talking about that guy that always comments on our weather comments.
Yeah, it's very unprofessional to have that rain outside. I'm going to have to insulate my room, my bedroom. I'm going to have to invest in that. Khalid, we got a question for you.
Awesome.
From Sally. First thing, I'd like to say that I recently discovered the FitCast, and I love listening to the show. You guys are great to make hours of data entry so much fun. Anyway, my question is, what do you guys think of L-carnitine? I always think I say this wrong. Keratin. I don't know if people say it differently. As a supplement, personally, I've found that taking 1 gram of this really gives me a boost, especially when in a deficit and feeling particularly low on energy. However, I am wary that this could just be a placebo effect. I've been led to believe that the research on L-carnitine doesn't show that it has any great effects, but I was wondering if any of you have witnessed any benefits or not of supplementation for yourself or your clients. I don't mean necessarily in terms of fat loss or calories burned during a workout so much as feeling of energy, lethargy, tiredness, appetite, etc. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this. Did I say that rightly?
You're asking me. I think it's carnitine.
Carnitine, yeah.
That's fine. I think it's carnitine, but you're asking me. So
I say actually as actually. Too.
Yeah, and so. I say lobster and lieberry, so whatever.
You don't say lobster?
No. So yeah, here's the thing with carnitine. Most of the research that has been done on it has been pretty bunk. There's really not a lot of good research on it as a supplement. As far as for fat loss, there's things that suggest that it could inhibit fat loss, not help it, because it does have some antagonistic acts to thyroid function. So I don't really know exactly what good it does in any sort of excess for anyone that's not, like, say, low on those levels naturally, which would be weird. There are some anecdotal things that a lot of people have suggested that it does give them energy boosts. There's something that I found research-wise that suggests that this it has any sort of validity to it beyond placebo, but there are a lot of anecdotal bases where people say that they get energy from it. They feel less groggy in a deficit. And this is particularly based to deficit times. If in a deficit, you can take it. I don't really know what it would do to harm you on a low level. But like I said, there are some things that, you know, could say that it could inhibit thyroid function, which I think is kind of interesting. But I don't think that on any sort of low level anyway, that would even be really a large issue. I don't really know how it could hurt you. I don't really see how it could help other than some of the anecdotal based evidence that it could give you a little bit more energy. So you could try it and see if it works for you and gives you a little bit more energy. Great. There are other things that have shown better to give more energy in the day and that are cheaper. You know, so it kind of varies from what I'm seeing. But I would have to say overall, I'm going to have to go thumbs down on really seeing it doing anything or putting out anything that suggests that you would need to take it at this time from what I've seen from the research. So, and this is not my turn.
Oh, no.
No, it's not your turn.
We're going to actually take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of the mailbag.
Michael Boyles, strengthcoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? Then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet. Strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
All right, we're back in the mailbag, and you know, one thing I forgot to bring up in terms of updates from the official website of Lee Peel at leepeel.com was that, Lee, you've been going back to training and dancing again. What's up with that?
I would like to state for the record that I am not a professional dancer. And so anything that you see through my website is not a basis for professional dancing. Just want to make that very clear. But I do have a love for dance just in general and hanging out with my friends and doing things. So I've been trying to dance again since my ankle and just my legs in general are getting a little bit better. But this week has been really, really painful. It's been so painful. And as I was saying off air, I literally found myself in a bathroom stall. This is no joke. I was in a bathroom stall, and it was in a public restroom, and I could not get up on my own behalf. I had to use the I had to use the steel natty, who knows, God germ infested thing to help get my ass up. But the best part is, as I'm doing it, the door ever so slightly starts to swing open on the handicap stall. And I am there in all my glory, just ass in the air, holding on to that bar for dear life, trying to get in position in time so that some old lady isn't very scared when she enters the restroom as she sees my naked butt flapping in the wind. But,
wow.
Yeah, how's that for imagery? But, that's been my course this week. I'm very sore. Very sore. It sucks. I'm so weak. I'm such a really weak. I didn't cuss. I could have cussed just there, but I didn't. I'm weak.
Kind of did.
Yeah. And
I felt it.
Yeah.
That was ninja swearing right there.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was. It was. You didn't even see it.
Did you get that from Rush Hour too?
You know, if you seek Amy, Kevin Larrabee.
What?
No, Kevin. You fail on other things that fail.
Yeah.
All right, John, you got the next,
question Kevin.
For us.
Next question. Hi, Kevin. I'm doing research on myofascial release. I have found information by Boyle, Cressy, Scott, etc. Do you have any other recommendations? Also, could you tell me more about making foam rollers out of PVC pipe? Thanks so much for your help, Andrew.
Andrew, that's a great question, because I'm actually coming out with a 3-DVD set on how to make foam rollers out of PVC pipe.
Plug, nice.
Yeah, no, you got to sign up for my newsletter, and I'll get you a free sneak preview. But the here's the deal.
That's all.
There's a couple things that you guys should be checking out. First thing is, we've mentioned this like a lot on the show, you know, Tony doesn't just write blog posts about movies that no one really wants to see. He also writes articles from T-Nation from time to time. And he wrote an article called Soft Tissue for Tough Guys. And you should make sure to check that out. And I'll link to it again in the show notes. But it's very simple, straightforward guide on some techniques for using the foam roller. Also, if you haven't already, Bill Hartman and Mike Robertson did a DVD for upper body warm-up called Inside Out. You can get that at robertsontrainingsystems.com. I think it's the best place to go for it. And also, Eric is flying out to Indy this upcoming Saturday to film a new DVD with Mike Robertson and Bill Hartman. That's going to cover like everything. So that's something I will definitely, you should definitely keep a lookout for. But making foam rollers out of PVC pipe, and, you know, I'm going to give you a sneak preview. This is going to be a 3-DVD set. You know, and I've been talking with some people about getting it out there and making sure that, you know, people really understand on how to do this. But I really don't want to do this, but I'm going to give you the first step is to go to your local hardware store and go out back where they have the PVC pipe and ask them to cut about, you know, if you want to be generous, 2 feet, 2 feet long of PVC pipe, usually something that's about 4 inches in the middle. That's the best way that I can put that, or 3 inches, anything between 3 and 4 will be good enough for you in terms of the inside part. I don't know. I'm not a hardware guy, but that will pretty much do it. It's going to cost you about $5, and you got a foam roller. Ah, crap. Screw it. I'm not even going to do the DVD set now because I just kind of gave it away, but that's how you do it. That's how you
do it. You're such a humanitarian.
You know what, guys? I try to give back, and, you know, obviously, until we start charging $5 an episode for the podcast, I'm going to do my best.
You're changing lives.
That's a joke. So I think that's pretty much it. Do you guys have any...
you're changing lives, Kevin. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Just for the record, too, myofascial release, there's some research on actual techniques that a practitioner will use as far as self-myofascial release about doing it on a foam roller. There's pretty much nothing.
Yeah, you say it's pretty it's pretty sketchy, though, the research that has been done.
Yeah,
it's
very difficult because the way that we do things clinically and the way that they might be analyzed in research potentially will be different. And so it's not a fault of a researcher. It's not a fault. You know, there's a big thing about you'll get online and people love to debate research. They grab one vague research study and they go, and they pick it apart. And although you do that with every research study, it still doesn't invalidate what might have been found in terms of the research. It just makes it, you know, okay, I have to look at a lot of things. I have to see what the general consensus is. So just throwing that out there because you'll find stuff like that all over the place as far as like myofascial or whatever, and people just ripping apart research left and right, going, it's all crap, you can't learn anything from it. Of course that's nonsense. But
yeah,
as far as
there's always some variable it points to.
Yeah.
You know?
There's always. But as far as the myofascial research out there, I mean there's stuff suggesting and here's another thing too. Research is very specific. So when we look at myofascial research, you might find that there might be a clinical prediction rule in terms of myofascial release, although I don't think that there is. But you know, there might be something indicating myofascial release on the, you know, IT band was beneficial in 35 to 45 year old runners complaining of these symptoms, whatever. And that doesn't necessarily mean, therefore, technically, that it would be good for other populations or whatever. So when you look at this research, please keep that in mind when you're trying to figure out if something is good or not good. That goes with nutrition, it goes with exercise, whatever. But as far as getting back on topic, self-myofascial release, there's pretty much nothing there. So you have to kind of use your best judgment. Most of the stuff that we get in terms of self-myofascial release has more to do with preventing injury than necessarily curing injury, but it might might be indicated for use there too, but most of the stuff that you'll read will be more about maintaining performance rather than getting back from it. So a lot of times I'll get questions about, hey, how can I fix all these things? Can I use a foam roller? And at that point, you have to kind of seek out someone's expert opinion and not try to do it yourself rehab stuff. But I don't know. I'm going on tangents. But I don't know. I just kind of – all those things kind of came to my mind when I read that question, which was a good question. But I don't know.
Well, John, I want you to continue your tangent because greetings from one of your four MMA fans. A question for John. What exactly is neural tension? Some background. I went to a physiotherapist a few months ago with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. She tried several things that didn't work with me before she figured out that I had neural tension and started me on neural flossing exercises, ankle plantar and dorsiflexion, during supine hamstring stretching. Since then, I would say my pain has decreased by about 90%. It creeps up again if I'm on my feet for extended periods of time or overdo my leg work. At the moment, I am mostly doing unweighted single leg squat and deadlift variations and swimming, as I don't want things to get worse again. I was also told that I am to avoid any type of back extensions. Is neural tension a genetic thing or something that I may have exacerbated by having a desk job or not being extremely diligent with post-workout stretching in the past? My physio did not explain much more than some people are just tight, but neural tension is not a term I have heard tossed around all that much, and Googling isn't turning up much info. Thanks very much for your insight. I look forward to your show every week. You guys are the best.
First, real quickly, as far as avoiding any kind of back extension, that's not a typical prescription for back pain. It's actually pretty rare that we don't suggest back extension. There are cases where that absolutely would be the rule, but in general, especially if you're at a desk job and you're therefore flexing all day long, I would double check and make sure that was actually the recommendation and then ask why. If your symptoms are increasing with back extension, then that would absolutely be one of the reasons why you would not do that, and there are some others as well. But just for your own sake, check that, because that's a little bit different than usual. But again, doesn't mean that it's wrong, just a little bit odd. So neural tension. Everyone can do this. So if unless you're – well, I guess you could probably do it with your driving too. Just be safe and keep one hand on the wheel. But everyone right now, take your arms and kind of make like you were doing a dumbbell fly motion. If you're lying down, that's fine. If you're standing up, that's fine. So bring the arms all the way out past, you know, into full extension, horizontal extension there. Now spread your fingers out, kind of splaying your fingers, and then extend your wrist backwards. Okay? You should feel this kind of weird stretch feeling running through your fingers and then probably into like your palm and your forearms. That's a neural stretch. It's actually the median nerve stretch. That's what neural tension is in a nutshell. So neural tension refers to the fact that our nerves need to be able to stretch just like our muscles do and anything else in the body. So as we move, we don't want our nerves to be static. We don't want them to not be able to move with the movements that we're producing in the body, because otherwise you're going to generate tension and possibly irritate the nerve. The nerves also need to slide a little bit. They're encapsulated in a neural sheath, so it's kind of like the fascia and the connective tissue that surrounds muscles and surrounds joints. It surrounds nerves too, in one way or another. And the nerves need to be able to slide just a little bit in those neural sheaths when we move as well. So you've got a combination of flexibility and movement and mobility of the nerves. Depending on what might be occurring in your body, some people are genetically predisposed to laying down a little bit more scar tissue than others, or there could be repeated trauma. You may find that nerve is encapsulated in a little bit of fibrotic tissue, so you may lose your ability to extend the nerve. The other times that might happen is if you're just not very mobile and you're not moving a whole lot, such as someone that might be sitting throughout the day like a desk job, then just like the muscles and the connective tissue that would shorten and become inflexible, the nerves will also do that as well. So what your physical therapist is doing, or physiotherapist, I guess you're from like Europe or something, what they're doing is they're trying to regain the flexibility of that nerve. And that, and if it, it is encapsulated in fibrotic tissue, then every time you move, that nerve will become irritated. It'll stay inflamed. It may increase pressure on the nerve from that inflammation and inflammatory process, and you'll receive pain from it. And so the best way to get out of that pain is to do these neural flosses, or at least part of that process, you know, along with possibly soft tissue work, possibly, you know, mobilization and whatever else might be indicated. So that doesn't mean necessarily that listeners should start going out and trying to reproduce those types of neural stretches. Most of the time they take care of themselves and normal mobility will, you'll be more than fine. But for situations like this, that might be a case where someone looks for at your neural tension, and there are special tests that you can do for that, and then address it. And I'm working on someone right now that has a cervical fusion C5 C6, and they're having neural radiculopathies. So they're having paresthesias, you know, tingling and pain sensations up and down the arms. And part of his treatment are these neural stretches for the particular nerves that are being indicated.
You so don't get paid enough.
Whatever.
Throwing it out there. I don't know who reads the next question. Yeah, because it just says general.
Yeah, I'll
just says general. Hey, good job, Kevin. Fire the producer.
Oh, no, you're so fired.
All right.
So fired.
Hey, guys. I feel a huge need to give tips to guys in the gym that were seriously trying to get themselves sidelined with a torn muscle from lifting. Should I? And if I should, what is the best way to give someone a warning, especially those that do a deadlift like they're doing a cat pose yoga ab move in the gym? Thanks and all the best. I think, you know, we all witnessed this. So what do you guys, what do you do, Lee?
You know, it's so tough being a
female,
as a woman,
by the way.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. That's a tough one. You know, you've really just got to look at the situation. There is a difference to a degree of, is someone getting ready to hurt themselves, or is someone just, you know, they don't really necessarily know what they're doing, and oh well, like that's they're doing their thing. And if I see someone doing something, just, you know, like for example, I think, because I just saw this happen, I just saw a girl doing jump split lunges on a Boju ball.
That's a good one.
Awesome.
I mean, I about had a conniption. But
is there something wrong with that?
You know, I obviously not. Obviously,
they weren't jumping high enough. That was the problem.
There you go. There wasn't quite enough bounce to their jumps. But yeah, you know, and I see that, and I'm like, well, you know, that's dangerous. But you know, I don't usually say anything. And I go about my way. If I see something that really just like, I saw a guy deadlifting, and I mean, he literally looked like he was just gonna pop something, and I, you know, I went over and I was like, look, dude, I do not want to be one of those people that try and like comes up and, you know, gets in your business. But I have to be honest. Like I think that you might see a better return for your exercise if you try this, and you could just give it a shot, or you can, you know, kind of tell me to go. And yeah, I said F myself. And, I just try and approach it not with cockiness. It's not about cockiness. It's not about trying to go up to someone and being like, I know more than you, and I'd like to relay my knowledge onto you, sir. You know, it's not about that. Like, use some tact and just be like, look, I just think that you might benefit from this. You know, I could be, you know, but hey, let me try and explain it to you my way. And I just try and approach it like I would want to be approached in a situation where I might be insecure about doing something wrong. You know, I don't know shit about cars. And if I was doing something stupid on a car and someone came up to me, I might be a little like, hey, you think that I don't know anything about cars? Because I don't. You know, but you kind of get, you know, sometimes you get your back up a little bit when someone's coming and contricting you. And I try and think, how would I best feel in that situation being approached? And just try and think of how you would best feel in that situation being approached with something. And that's just kind of how I roll with it. I try and be very nonchalant and just throw my advice out there, explain to them what I can. If they listen, they don't. But I usually stay out of it for the most part, unless I just see something god awful about to happen.
The best thing that I've found to do is actually those morons that are paid to clean off the dumbbells or to stand and count their clients, reps, those are the guys to go to and tell them, hey, I just saw someone doing something crazy. You might want to go mention it to them. They're paid to do that. But more importantly, I think that you get away from the problems that Lee talked about. It's like, you know, if you go and approach someone, then they don't know who you are. You're not wearing a fancy shirt that says staff. So they may take it the wrong way, although for the most part, honestly, I've had very few occasions where someone wasn't willing to listen. But the other advantage of that is that when you talk to a trainer, you can speak to them as someone that's supposed to know what you're talking about, which means that you don't have to dumb yourself down or be afraid that you're going to hurt their feelings. And you can speak to them as a professional. And if you do have some knowledge, you can throw that stuff in. I usually try to actually, and this is just in my mind, but if someone is going to come up to me and talk to me, you know, let's say I'm on the floor and I've got the staff shirt on and someone says, hey, do you know about deadlifting? Because I think that person's doing something bad. I might be like, do I know about deadlifting? Yeah. You know, as opposed to someone saying, hey, I saw someone that's, you know, really getting their movement from the lumbar spine there, and you might want to, you know, go over there or something. Because that assumes that the professional actually is a knowledgeable professional. And if they don't know, they might say, oh, I'm not sure what you're talking about. You know, they'll kind of inquire, because then they're not afraid, because you're already giving them that dignity of knowledge. So I find talking to someone on the floor makes it a lot easier. Let them handle the situation. That's what they're supposed to do. Having said that, if no one's on the floor, you don't feel comfortable with anyone on the floor because they're a bunch of morons, going up to someone and just paying them a compliment first does wonders. So if someone, let's say deadlifting again, you might walk up to them after their set and say, oh, you know, I saw you doing deadlifts. Those are awesome. You know, how long you've been deadlifting for? Kind of hype them up a little bit and then be like, you know, do you mind if I make it? I was just watching your form. If I could just give you a comment about it. And usually they're okay with it, especially because you were just paying them a compliment. So you could try that too. But just like Lee, I mean, I think I had a couple shows back, I was bitching and complaining how I tried to help some guy had asked me a question, and then it ended up being like an hour long discussion of every question he could think of. And it was like, I was like, you're killing me. So, you know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It really just depends on the mood I'm in and what I've got to do in the gym that day. And I would like to help everyone, but ultimately speaking, I think we'd all agree that you can't always. So,
yeah, I'm gonna call John out here for a second, because, you know, not every one of the trainers on the floor counting reps and doing personal training is a moron, because I am one of those people. You know, I think it's you really shouldn't. I don't mean to, like, actually I do mean to call you out, but, you know, I know a lot of people listening to the show are, you know, trainers that are trying to learn a little bit more. There is a large majority of people that are just doing it to, you know, because they like to lift, so they want to be a personal trainer and they don't want to learn anything. But I'm going to call you out on that real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's why I said that. Not all of them.
Mm, that sounded kind of
overwhelming. Oh, whatever.
Semantics.
Yeah. Did I press a nerve, Kevin?
A little bit, you know.
Sorry.
A little bit. No, and
Kevin,
I'm
sorry.
I'm just saying for the, you know, the other.
You know, I did that for like 7 years.
I know you did. That's why I know you didn't. You didn't mean that. I'm just saying.
Oh,
I just
Kevin.
So people out there. I don't want to get. I don't like having to go through our emails and reading through complaints. So I'd rather not have 5,000 emails come in saying that. Yeah, John shouldn't say that, because I count reps and I know what the lumbar spine is. But, you know, I think one of the big things is, you know, if you are a trainer, it's a little bit easier to do that, because you have the t-shirt on that says personal trainer. But some dudes aren't going to be that receptive, especially those guys that are deadlifting horribly while wearing a belt. You know, for some reason they get to wear a belt while deadlifting 200 pounds. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of the gym at this point. But the crap, I forgot my point completely.
Well, I'm gonna mute my microphone for a second, because I have to take a sip of my Haterade, and I don't want the gulping sound to interfere with the FitCast while I'm sipping on my Haterade.
That's okay. yeah, but that's it. I think John and Lee covered it pretty much. But it is tough, you know. Like, I think we all have been to the gym where if you answer one guy's question, he just bugs you all day, asking question after question after question. At some point, you want to be like, hey, you know we offer personal training? We have that here. Lee, we got a question for you that comes from Michael in New York, the NYC. It's our last question this week. I found your podcast about 3 months ago and I'm addicted. I've been going back and listening to previous episodes to see if my questions have been answered, and I'm glad to say that many of them have. Good job, Mike. However, something has come up and I need your advice. I'm a 26-year-old professional dancer, 5'10", 162 pounds, 8% body fat currently. I am participating in an intense summer program where I'm dancing about 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, with minimal breaks. The program is ballet class in the morning, followed by lots of modern dance, especially improvisation, which is more exhausting than you might think. The dancing is insanely intense, and I don't use that term lightly. The problem, I'm afraid to eat large portions of food during my breaks because I'll get sick to my stomach while dancing, but I end up starving all day. Right now I'm resorting to natural fruit juices, bananas, granola, yogurt, and protein bars. I know Lee advised dancers to integrate more protein in the dancer's diet, and I'm working on it. When my day is done, I find myself craving lots of pasta and veggies, broccoli and carrots mostly. My caloric intake is probably 2,500 to 3,000 calories a day if I am lucky. What foods can I eat to feed my body that will give me lots of energy and won't sit in my stomach during the day? Any other things to think about would be greatly appreciated. You guys are the best. P.S. I know Kevin or Jonathan mentioned PVC pipe for rolling out muscles. Also try a rolling pin for the quads. Looks silly, but it works. And that's a good idea. If you have a rolling pin and you don't have a stick or the stick, sounds like a good alternative. And P.S., this is for Tony, Gandalf for president.
Awesome. Nice. Nice. Well, you know, it's tough whenever you are dancing on that kind of a level or doing any sort. I mean, this goes for any athlete that's doing a lot of training, you know, on a constant basis and to try and get in your, you know, your nutrition throughout the day. What I always recommend in situations like this is when you're not training, eat, you know, and eat a good amount. So, you know, your very, very long post-workout nutrition, I mean, really load it up. Eat what you can, you know, eat what you can early in the day before it could start, eat what you can, later in the day, afterwards and try and really get in a lot of, you know, recovery nutrition, and get a bang for your buck there. I'm going to assume that you're already doing that, but if for some reason you're not, if you're not really, you know, feeding yourself afterwards, then do that and make that like a really big priority. Having said that, what, I like to use for a lot of clients that have to do things like that is you can get natural ones. You can, it doesn't, you can make them yourself, however you want to, you know, do it, depending upon, you know, like how you feel about artificial ingredients or whatever. But there's a lot of really good protein and energy bars out there now that are very calorically dense. They're very small. And they do not, you know, jiggle around in the stomach. You're not going to get a lot of gas from them. You're not going to get a lot of, you know, those normal kind of digestion burps from like jumping around and doing things. There's one called BPX makes them, I believe. They're zero impact bars. They have a peanut butter and a pumpkin bar. They're like 450 calories per bar. They're delicious and they're big, but they're not like huge. And, you know, you could definitely get you some of that. That would get you some protein in as well. You could do things like, you know, yogurt is really good, especially if you mix it with some nuts. It's, you know, two items that are a little bit more calorically dense, but not so heavy. So yogurt with some nuts or some granola, things like that. I think you're pretty much on the right track. Just do what you can to nibble more. You know, I get that you're going to be in a situation in which it's going to be kind of hard to do that. But, you know, get yourself some juices and, you know, get yourself some food, nibble on it. And when you get a chance, when you get a break, have a sip, have a bite. You don't have to, you know, sit down and eat the entire thing in one sitting. Just grab a bite, literally, when you can. Drink, you know, have a sip of your drink whenever you can, literally. you know, if you're doing rotational rounds where, you know, your classmates or your training partners are, you know, they're going through their circuit and they're doing their movements and getting critiqued by the teacher, it may only be, you know, 15 to 20 seconds that you have while you're standing there, but you can have a bite and you can, you know, just kind of grab a little bite, grab a sip and go on. I'm not talking about a huge thing, but just a little bit. So just really maximize the time that you have. Maximize the time that you have because you will feel better. It will make you feel tremendously better to support your training on that kind of level with the nutrition. So it's pretty simple of a question and explanation, but hopefully it gives you just a few more ideas. And definitely look into the bars. You can either make them yourself or you can buy them. And there's so many options these days and within calorie levels as well.
So. Very cool. I think that's going to wrap it up. And, you know, when we love getting questions into the show. You can send them to questions at thefitcast.com or you can go to thefitcast.com and you can go to the contact tab on the top. But we have been getting quite a few emails that are more like what I would get for someone that wants to do personal training, like getting a whole history. And, you know, some of these are literally almost 400 words. We can't read a 400 word email on the show just because it's going to take too long. And hopefully if you sent those in, you kind of know who you are. And if you can just,
you know who you are.
I know. Just try to keep your email shorter and we'll try to answer them on the show. But, you know, and those questions that are like, hi, I'm 6'2", 180 pounds. I've been lifting for 3 years. Can, like, more or less wanting us to give you a program to do over the air, we can't do that. It would just take too long, and that's more or less, that's personal training, and that's like an orientation. So we can't really do that. So I apologize, but try to keep your questions to questions and not us giving you a prescription for something. And as always, everything we've said on the FitCast is not a prescription. Make sure to consult your physician.
This is for entertainment purposes only.
Entertainment purposes only, folks.
That's true. Pink Dumbbell Award.
Hold on. Let me play the music. Hopefully I'll remember to put that in.
That'd be great. Otherwise, they'll just be listening to...
I'll put it in.
Pink Dumbbell Award goes to the question about how to tell someone that they're doing a bad deadlift, because that allowed me to pour out a little haterade from my homies who aren't here.
Okay, congratulations. General.
General.
Congratulations, General.
General haterade.
General haterade.
Could you tell that I was in a text argument, Lee?
A little John.
Whoever sent that in,
I got uncomfortable, and I bet you the listeners did too. I say you're very uneasy with myself, and all of a sudden I felt the need to hide from like a parental fight underneath the sheet. I'm just throwing it out there.
Hope we're not stirring up any childhood memories, Lee.
They're gone. That's a therapy session and a half.
I guess it does beg the question, though. What do we think about the state of personal training these days?
Oh, you know, it's funny because I was on on Charles Staley's Iron Radio. Very good podcast, by the way. And they sent me the topic. Actually, I suggested one of the topics beforehand, and they're like, oh, we're going to discuss the fitness industry. And I was like, crap. I'm going to discuss the fitness industry. They won't ask me back on, but it was actually pretty tame. But I think that there's so many goods and there's so many bads. I think the good is that there's so much information out there. I mean, really, you can get access to information like you could never before. It's unbelievably easy to get quality information, you know, if you know, obviously using the right resources. And I think that that's just fantastic. But at the same time, there's more people. And therefore more douches trying to, take a bite out of the buck of man. And I think that in any field, you're going to have, the bad apples that spoiled the bunch. And I just happen to think that this is a field in particular, that there's a lot of them. So, I don't know. I think it's a mixed bag, like with anything. But I think that it's really interesting, the legislative things that are kind of starting to try and go through. And I have hopes for that becoming more powerful in the future.
I'm still mixed about that personally, because I don't think that it really solves any true issues. Because I think if you look at any field, there's always quackery, and there's always guru worship. And I think it's a step in the right direction. I just don't know what direction it's stepping in.
Yeah, I mean,
and I respect both sides of the argument. Like, I just had to pass my boards, right? But that didn't make me a good therapist. It just made sure that I wouldn't, like, hurt someone necessarily. And that's not even the case either. And speaking from, like, my standpoint, I mean, I'm going through this residency, right? And people ask me, like, why are you doing that? Is it required? And no, it's not. The idea is just that I would like to learn from at a higher level, possibly, you know? And when you look at some of the things that occur in my field, it's questionable. It's guru worship. It's not necessarily evidence-based, which in and of itself might, you know, there might be some issues with that even, but it's the best approach that we have. And so, and yet, you know, people are able to practice that way. People are able to sustain a lifestyle that way. And then when we get into stuff like personal training, where it's even, you know, lower barriers to entry, you know, it's like every time I try to feel good about the industry, it something comes up that just makes me bitter and angry about it. And I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, that's the question. Like, do we think that there's a problem? And if there is a problem, how do you fix that?
I don't think you're ever going to fix it, because you're dealing with humans.
No.
I mean, I hate to sound just incredibly, like, cynical, but at the end of the day, I think that you are always going to have people that are going to try and cut corners to achieve their ultimate in feeding goals. And when you have ego and you have greed, you're always going to have problems. You're always going to. I think there's no test that you can take for ethics. There's not an ethics test. You know, there's not an ethics board.
There are ethics tests. I had to take some.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, though. I mean, there's not, you know, if we were all really forced to live by, you know, an ethical rule. And God, with the internet and anonymity being what it is, I mean, I think that it's really boils down to how much you take pride in what you do. And if there's a course for that, and if you have to pass that in order to become anything in what you do, a doctor, a personal trainer, anything, I think then we have a chance. But I think at the end of the day, it's about pride in your work. Laziness. I mean, people, they pass tests and then that's it. They, you know, they get the NASM or the ACE certifications, or they do their CSCS and they take their tests and, oh, well, that's it. I'm done learning now. I am king of all, you know, and they don't ever take it to that next level. It's laziness. It's greed. And those are common problems that we've been dealing with from the beginning of time. And I don't think that's ever going to change.
Well, then do you think that we need to raise the barrier of entry to the profession?
But
make
who's
a standard.
Do that?
And that's where I said where the legislation thing, some degree, came into hand, because while I do think that, I mean, what does college mean? I debate with doctors all the time. Not in a mean way, but you know what I'm saying. I respect it. I think it's amazing. But you know that they're definitely, that does not say everything. So I think that it doesn't necessarily mean that is the person who graduates from school and then has to go through specific training on this, and then they have to go through another level and cross through all that red tape like you had to cross through to do what you need to do. Is that going to weed people out? Yes, I think it will. I think it will weed the lazy out to a degree. But then from that point, where does it go? That's, you know, I think that's like the whole other issue, in my opinion.
Oh, and we do have continuing education requirements too, but then do we get more stringent about those continuing education requirements? Like, this came up the other day. After my residency, I'll be sitting for my clinical specialization in orthopedics, and it's basically an exam, you know, after residency. Right now, you can do it without a residency. You just have to have a certain amount of hours practiced, and you need to be eligible to sit for it. And there have been movements to try to make that impossible, so that now you would have to go through a residency in order to be eligible for clinical specialization. But like our field, my field, in physical therapy is the type of thing where you don't need to have a clinical specialization to practice orthopedic physical therapy or anything. I mean, as of right now, if I decided that I wanted to go into pediatrics, all I need to do is apply for a job in pediatrics, and if they decide that I am worth hiring, they can hire me. There's no barrier. But try to do that with like a neurosurgeon who decides that they want to be, you know, an orthopedic surgeon and start working on knee replacements. They'd have to go through an entirely different process in order to do that. So do we need something like that? I mean, we have something, you know, we have certain standards in terms of what people think. Oh, the CSCS, that's a very good certification, and maybe NASM, very good certifications. But do we need to make that more specific? Do we need to decide that just like the medical field where, you know, it, you know, I forgot what the statistic is. I think it's something ridiculous, like 95-98% of all medical doctors will have gone through their residency, which basically means that 2% of medical doctors basically aren't practicing as physicians. Do we need to do something like that for personal training as well? And then at that point, where do we stop? Because just like in physical therapy right now, people are saying, oh, that's all well and good, but our system is not the way that the medical system is, where you make, you know, $60,000, $40,000 as a medical resident, but when you graduate from your residency, the expectations are that salary increases double, even triple or more, depending on what field, you know, area of specialty you're in. For physical therapy, that doesn't really happen. There's very limited research to indicate that there's much of any incentive after residency training other than just having greater skill sets, and that may not be enough for someone to you know, convince them that they should take a salary cut to receive little to no greater reimbursement after it's done. And that's a big problem. So how do we do that with personal training? But where people aren't making that much to begin with.
Yeah, but John, you talked about making the like a CSCS or the NASM certification more specific, but how can you make it more specific when a lot of these people that are going to be taking it are going to deal with the general population? Like if you talk about the CSCS, you're more or less, that is a concentration. You're concentrating on strength and conditioning, where something like the NASM, it has to be broad because you could be training an 18-year-old or you could be training a 6-year-old, and they do have other specialties outside of those general.
Well, that's not what I meant necessarily. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but that was just like an example. Like in other words, right now, especially for just the general gym goer, they're going to walk in and they're going to say, oh, you have personal trainers? Okay. And so in other words, it's like, is there an educational problem going on not only between personal training, the field of personal training, but also in the general population too? They don't know what these acronyms stand for, and they don't know what's good or bad. They don't know what to ask a personal trainer, you know, in terms of understanding their qualifications and their knowledge base, because there's so much misinformation out there. So, and yet if you walked into a physician's office, I think that there's more and more so, even and now more than ever with the internet, people become more knowledgeable about what it is that they're being prescribed or who they're seeing. You know, you do Rate My, you know, Physician, you know, or My Doctor or whatever those websites are. You do a little bit of research, and that doesn't mean everyone does it, but I think more people do it now than would have been 20, 30 years ago in the past. So does that need to take place for our field too? And so like I understand what you're saying, like, oh, well, the CSCS is specialized. But my point is just that so let's say you wanted to go to someone for performance training. Do we need some kind of certification or credentialing to indicate that if you don't see a trainer with these credentials, they're probably not as good as someone else? You know, just like if I went to a physician and they were, you know, sports medicine, you know, they had their residency in sports medicine, you know, in orthopedics or whatever, I know that I'd rather go to see that surgeon that had a residency in orthopedics than a surgeon that did not do a residency in orthopedics, because they would not be specialized and trained for that procedure. You know, and this is something significant. I mean, we know less about our personal trainers that we'll see, you know, 2 to 3 times a week for years than we know about a physician. And the obvious answer to that is, well, if I don't seek proper medical guidance, I could have serious injury, risk of death. But you know what? That sounds a lot like personal trainers to me too, just in a longer overall run.
I think that there's there's definitely a lack of, you know, there's too many organizations. Mm-hmm. There's too many certifications. There's too many loopholes, because let's be honest, like at the end of the day, you could put all the barriers you want to in front of a personal trainer, but then there's wellness coaching. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know what I mean? I mean, there's a never ending way to get around certain things. And for those who want to prosper and make money through something, I do think, in my personal opinion, I'd like to see us cut down on all the certifications. I'd like to see us consolidate to a kind of more specific, like, oh, well, and it doesn't necessarily have to be one that's already out there per se, but I would personally like to see us just be like, oh, well, in order to be a personal trainer, you know, this is kind of like the certification. This is kind of the golden standard. And then, of course, you have to look at who writes that and what are the questions based off and how, you know, up to date is the research and can you trust the backing and et cetera, of all these things. But I think that I would like to see all the massive amount of certifications kind of dissipate. Because you can walk into a gym and at any point, one's ACE, one's NASM, one's ISSA, one is AFPA, one is, it is never ending. There's so many. And then you have, you know, I'm NASM, you know, I'm not even a CSCS. And if you compare me to another NASM trainer, not to be mean or rude or overly narcissistic, but I think that you're going to find a lot of difference towards me and the average person because that has that certification simply because of the level of furthering my personal education that I take it. You know, not everyone does that. And but if you compare an ASM to an ACE, is there really any difference? I don't think so. Not overall. I don't really think there is. ISSA, I don't think there's any really difference. A CSCS, no. I'm sorry. I don't think there's any difference. I think there's no difference, especially considering, and I think this is just ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous that you can take the CSCS and not have specialized in the field of your education in that. Mm-hmm. What is the point? 4 years of college education, but it doesn't matter what it's in. I mean, I just think that that's just kind of silly.
Well, it allows more people to take the test and therefore give them more money.
Well, of course. I mean, I see the economical ramifications for it, but... you know, I think that we would benefit a lot from consolidating into one focus and then putting all our energy. And I think it's a great point, John. I think we would really better off from consolidating and put all our energy and focus and maximizing one certificate or, you know, one really field of representation of our organization and putting all the education and resources and learning into that and letting that be the prime leader. But I mean, you know, what are the odds of that happening? I don't know. But I think that that could maybe be a step in the right direction, knocking it all out and just having it be one. We put all our focus, our quality control, the experts, you know, the board members, everything, just you line them up. This is the organization and everything has to go through this. And
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I think that's a very important point too, because if you look at all the other examples that we've used, you know, medicine, physical therapy, all the, you know, these kind of related health or medical fields, they all have a central body. Yeah. They all have an organization. I mean, what does personal training have? There's something. They have a conference every year, but it's not really a central body. It's just kind of more like, oh man, what's it called? It's escaping me right now, but you know, that they'll have like a conference for personal training, and it doesn't matter who you're certified in or whatever. It's just all personal training. They give out like the personal trainer of the year, and you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Man, I can't think of what it's called. IDEA. The IDEA? Nothing? Doesn't ring a bell?
No.
Wow.
Is Lee still there?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Hey, Lee.
I
don't think she is.
Yeah, but anyway, that's...
she sounds... Oh, there we go. You sounded like a horrible noise.
Yeah, IdeaFit.
Yeah.
Idea Health and Fitness Association. Like, that's the closest thing that I could think of right now that even comes to, like, a central organizing body. So, you know, like, for physical therapy, we have the APTA, you know, and that's our centralizing organizing body. So you're a member of the APTA or you're not. You vote or not and whatever. But this is – they regulate the field. Personal training doesn't have that. So anything that's done is kind of like, you know, everyone's running around with their heads chopped off and no one's leading their direction. And maybe that's something that needs to take place. Maybe Idea Fit or something like that needs to be recognized as the central organizing body, and that you need to have certification through Idea or something like that, you know, whatever it is. Because otherwise it's really, there's no standard of practice. And I think that's the problem. That's the first problem. Hmm. Right? I mean, we can complain and say, oh, people know this, they don't know that, trainers or whatever, but no one's telling them that they have to know anything. There's no standard. You can find plenty of gyms where they don't even care if you're certified or not. I think that's now because of litigation, more gyms are – that's less likely. But there's really, you know, what is the standard of practice?
Well, dude, it's going to be tough because when you look at these, you know, health clubs, it's going to be a lot cheaper for them to hire someone that can just take, like, I don't know if I should say this or not, but like Boston Sports Club, they basically have their essentials,
like an in-house,
yeah. test that you. Basically, you just take it online. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, I think it's just, it's a fact of money because they will make more money off of hiring someone that either doesn't have a college degree or doesn't have a background in the field, because usually those people are going to go off to, you know, have other jobs. Like, they're not going to work in personal training. They might go into coaching or something like that. So I just don't, I mean, everything that you're saying, you know, it sounds great. That'd be awesome if it happened, but it's money.
You know? But, you know, the money can still be made. It's just a matter of, you know, it is economic. And that's, I think, the biggest problem now, because all these, you know, that's a huge barrier as far as what Lee was talking about in terms of, you know, laws being passed, because now what happens to all these certification bodies? Because they're making a lot of money right now, and they're going to really push to make sure they still get a piece of the pie, and that's understandable. But I think the issue is if we, I mean, let's have the first annual meeting of personal training litigation and responsibility. I don't mm-hmm. know. So, do we agree that there should be one centralized body that is legally responsible for the practice of personal training?
I don't know.
Would that be a step in the right direction or the wrong direction?
It's tough to say because you don't know what that body is going to be, and you don't know.
But we can vote on that. We can decide what we want that body to be. Just like any other burgeoning field, they decided through their bylaws what they were, you know, basically it was a group of people that came together that, you know, unions, whatever it is, and they all decide that this is what we're going to do and this is what we're not going to do. So we can decide on that. But the first question is it even a good idea?
We as in the people that might sign up to get the certification, or we as in the people who start this?
Like the people that start this, like, okay, we're going to be – now we're on the board of Idea Fit, and we decide that we want to be the regulating body of personal training. We're going to – you know, is that a good idea? Should there be laws passed that develop and encourage one unionizing body for personal trainers?
I don't know, dude.
Anything else – you know, it's just like, look at it this way. Okay, so for example, physical therapy, we have the APTA. That doesn't mean that you can't become a certified McKenzie therapist. It doesn't mean that you can't become, you know, a fellow of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can have those credentials. But in order to be a practicing physical therapist, you must pass the national board exam for practice of physical therapy. And you cannot be a licensed physical therapist until you've satisfied that requirement, and that's a legally binding and designated term. That's why, like, even if you look at my credentials now, it's PT, DPT, because a DPT, the doctor of physical therapy, is not a legally binding term. PT is. So in order to be if I'm a licensed physical therapist, I write PT behind my name. If I don't, it means I'm not licensed. So do we, you know, like the CPT, does CPT become the legal designation of a licensed personal trainer? If that's the case, then you need to have a legal framework to do that. Someone needs to give a test. Someone needs to be able to grade the test, and someone needs to have laws that constitute that as legal and able to practice. And therefore, those that do not have that designation could be found liable because they're practicing without specialized training.
Yes, it would be great if we could, if you know, we as in, you know, the like-minded folk came up with, you know, came to an agreement on this, but I just, who's going to say that, you know, we'll have the ability to do that? Like, it's great to dream about that, but I think one thing, having some kind of competition, like having, you know, in some ways, the NASM and the NSCA, they're competing because they both offer a CPT, which for many companies and many organizations will be considered equal.
Okay, so then that's – but then that's the different question, because they're not equal, because the NSCA practices
exactly.
Research. No. The NSCA and the ACSM practice research. They contribute to evidence-based practice. NASM, to my knowledge, does not. So is that something that's important to us?
Well, no. What I'm trying to say is, though, that for organizations that are going to be requiring something like that, they're looked at as the same. So – it still adds for some competition, and you know, some people think the NASM cert is going to be better than the NSCA version because you know it deals more in warm ups and in prehab stuff, where the NSCA they really don't go into that too much, and corrective exercise is also a big component of the NASM certification. So you know, some might say that's a better certification. Like,
but then that would become a specialization that wouldn't become the entry, the barrier to practice. It would become a specialization, just like my OCS
Well, it's like their CES too. They have a corrective exercise specialist
right.
for NASM too.
Right. So then maybe it becomes the thing where there is a national board license, and then you are eligible to get specialization certification, like an NASM, you know, a rehabilitation specialist or whatever they call it, or a CSCS or something like that. Like, for instance, the CSCS is actually – and this is what I find interesting. CSCS is recognized as a professional certification in my field too. So my credentials on my business card at UDEL, I don't have anything about, you know, the ACSM or USAW, because those aren't considered to be professional certifications in physical therapy. Mm-hmm. But I do include CSCS.
Gotcha.
And that doesn't mean necessarily that you can go to if you go to a physical therapist for like a sports rehab and they don't have a CSCS, then you say, oh, you don't know anything. But it is recognized as a professional certification. Just like if I decided to get trained in McKenzie therapy, I would have and passed took the coursework and passed those exams, I could write Cert MDT behind my name. That doesn't make me a physical therapist. What it makes me is a physical therapist that's trained in McKenzie mechanical diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Well,
as opposed to right now, where it's just like, what's that?
Just give people a heads up that Lee's not on the call anymore. Sure, her internet must have died or something.
No, that sucks. But so interesting question. So kind of going back to what I said before, it's like, do we have any standard to suggest that you were right or that I was right, or what's the middle? The fact is, I don't think that we do. We don't have professional standards. I could make claim that, you know, I could make claim that, oh, all personal trainers suck. And you can make claim, which you weren't, that, oh, all personal trainers are great. And the fact is, we don't have a standard to suggest that either one of us is correct.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest issue that compromises the field currently.
Yeah, it's not coming anytime soon.
No, it may not be, but I think also that there, you know, policies need to be put in place so we can talk about it and debate about it online and on podcasts. But until there really is support, kind of like what Lee was saying, you know, people are trying to pass legislation. I do believe that that's a step in the right direction, but what steps are we taking? What direction does that go? Those are the things that need to be debated and put forth in the process. And can you tell that I was a political science undergrad major? But that to me is what needs to be to occur, because I take seriously the field, and I think that people deserve, you know, educated and properly educated and expert practitioners. And right now, there's no standard to say, to even begin to suggest. So even though maybe passing a licensure exam or going to school does not necessarily mean that you will be an expert, but what it does mean that you will at least have achieved a certain standard.
Yeah.
And that standard can be expected throughout the field. And right now, there are some legal standards in place, you know, what is considered to be normal practice. But, you know, it's not as powerful, I don't think.
It's not going to even matter, because according to the Mayans, the world's going to end in 2012 anyway, so.
Oh, that's true. Good point.
We only got 3 more years left.
Okay, I'm sorry. Then let's all get drunk.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing that movie 2012 is coming out before 2012. It's smart that they're doing that. I don't know if you've seen that trailer, but it looks pretty
cool. I did.
I think that's going to wrap it up. We have done a 2.5-hour long podcast this week. So.
Yeah. Yeah, after seeing repeated requests to make our podcast shorter.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Whatever. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. And we'll probably talk about this later. And unfortunately, like I said, Lee is not on Skype, so I'm guessing her internet has crapped the bed. It's a tough discussion, man. We'll leave it for this week, and please make sure to check out theficast.com. Check out the show on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe there and leave a nice comment if you do, please. And you can check out John's site at acceleratedstrength.com. And that's pretty much it, John.
Yep.
Yep.
We've solved no problems. And only revealed inadequacies.
It's like debate class. We just got in an argument.
Yeah, it was great, though.
I miss that.
I miss poli sci. I really do.
Well, I used to get in the, the hard arguments. Like, we used to have one, there was a couple people. Most of us were young, and so obviously a lot of us fell on the more liberal side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be, like, two or three, like, hardcore right-wing Republicans. And, it'd be always be interesting just getting in debates, not arguments, debates, about things. It's good to hear both sides.
Yeah, I think you can tell from the side that I was arguing which spectrum of the political leanings I tend to walk on, asking for more standardization more government. Yeah.
So you're a big fan of the Fox News, huh?
Great fan.
Actually, we're going to leave because I got Bill O'Reilly on TV. I got to go watch that right now.
Nice. Have a good time.
Yeah. So again, thanks for listening to the show. We will see you all next week when we might have a guest. I don't know. Check out the newsletter. I'll give you an update. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Got the last word in. Boom.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you,
sir. See you later.
Bye-bye. Get off the airplane. That's us.
This is Tony Gentilcore.
Hey, this is Tony. Oh yeah.
That would have been interesting for him to be on, because he tends to be more conservative.
Tony is conservative.
Yeah.
And I'm still recording this. Maybe.
Okay. No. He should be on. This would be a good debate to have with Tony. I'd be interested to hear what he'd want to do.
We got into great debates before the election. It was a good time. Doing sled sprints and in between sets being like, effing Tony Gentilcore. How could he say that? seriously, guys, we're going to stop talking. We get an epic 20-minute off-topic discussion coming up right now, coming up on our 3-hour-long podcast.
Oh, my God. It really is 2.5 hours.
All right. I'm going to go grow hamburgers. See you later, folks.
Bye. Bye-bye.
No, John.
What?
Why do you always have to say the last thing?
Hmm.
If only we could have put in what Lee said about my desk. If that was in the show, people would have died.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah, that was... Yeah.
All right. No, seriously, we're going to end it.
Good night, Seattle.
Welcome to the off-topic discussion. I'm Kevin Larvey, and Lee and John are with me. Hey,
yep.
Guys.
Howdy.
Sup? I'm in a giggly mood today.
We got a bad review, I was telling Lee.
I just found it. I'm really excited.
It? Online?
Go for it. On iTunes.
What did it say?
Says, watch your potty mouth, Kevin Larrabee.
It says that the hosts and guests are informative, although when they resort to vulgar profanity, the show turns into a turn off. How does the old saying go? Profanity is a sign of a weak mind struggling to express itself.
Yeah, John, you got a weak mind with that doctorate you have.
Pretty
fucking dumbass.
However. The gentleman registered a complaint. He was not approving of the pottiness. And the complaint was duly noted.
So what you're saying is that we'll watch our fucking language from now on?
If you may be alienating a certain subgroup of our listeners.
Yeah, I know. I'll admit that I went a little overboard last week. I think anyone will agree.
I think it was the week before.
Or any week that I've been on.
Yeah, no, it was the week before. My bad.
Yeah,
I'm gonna start trying to cuss in secret code.
Oh,
yes, I think that I'm gonna switch my profanity to better uses of my creative mind. You know,
different languages.
Yes. Yeah. Uh huh.
You know what you could do is like on Battlestar Galactica, they say frack. Because
they do say frack.
That's their F word.
That's their F word.
Or they'll say God's damn it because they
God's damn it.
They believe in
polytheistic. Oh, look at that.
Nice.
See? You know what?
That is a bright mind.
Yep. Yep. So guys, there's a couple things I want to talk about in this off topic discussion.
Okay, Kevin.
First off, Ghostbusters, the video game. Holy crap, is it good. If you guys... Hold on. Do you guys like Ghostbusters?
Of course. I'm a child of the 80s.
All right.
Don't you have another podcast for this kind of stuff?
Hey, John.
Hmm.
Hmm. You know, this is, I think, something that other people will be interested in. This is like pop culture stuff. It's not like I'm talking about Halo 2, right? This is Ghostbusters, and the reason I bring it up is it's supposed to be the third movie in the series. That's how they're pitching it. And I've had so much fun, and it's like hanging out with the Ghostbusters and being able to catch... I was the kid who had like the fake PKE meter, and I had the trap that was like powered by air, and when you stepped on like this air pump, the trap would open up.
They had that?
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. It was awesome.
Wow.
And you know, it's just been a lot of fun, and I think people, if you like Ghostbusters and you have like a Wii or an Xbox, you should pick it up. It's all the same actors came back and did the voices, and it's just great to hear Dan Aykroyd talk.
I thought that was really sweet. I'm intrigued now. I love the Ghostbusters. That's all I got.
You have a Wheelie, so you owe it to yourself to hit up.
You know, I'll get it. I'm on it. And I will think of you stepping on your childhood ghost catcher as I do so.
It's fantastic. Even in between levels, you get to walk around the firehouse, and like Vigo's in there.
Annie Potts there.
Yep, she came back and she's answering the phone. Like randomly, she'll answer a phone call. Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
That's my best New York accent.
So. Wow, both of you guys just hurt my ears.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
There you go, John.
John, you be the accent king.
Mm-hmm. So let me just interject here for a moment to the listeners. The problem is that we all start chatting before we are actually record the off topic, and we were chatting about Megan Fox and black holes, and then Lee's nether regions. And
No, Lady Gaga's nether regions.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It was Lady Gaga. So then we get on topic and we try to be like a little bit more discreet, and then we end up talking about Ghostbusters. Personally, I'd prefer to get back to the nether regions and black holes.
I guess that is more entertaining, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking out for the listeners.
It's good. It's good that and you know what I appreciate, John Fass, is your ability to relay this information in such a church manner.
Thank you.
While on air.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't want to alienate listeners.
No, of course not.
No.
Of course not at all. And who is the person who passed along the boobs and ass picture?
John, Dr.
Fass. It's about deadlifts. It's okay. Squats.
It's about form. Deadlift
right.
Form.
I think that it's a perfect example of squats and deadlifts.
Right. Absolutely is.
And a classic argument, too. What is more important, the squat or the deadlift, or
right.
The blonde or brunette?
Get your mind out of the gutter just because the two models for mm-hmm. the direct result of the activities, the aforementioned mm-hmm. activities.
Mm.
Whatever.
Yeah. I think that's show note worthy, Kevin.
Just so I think it's going to be our artwork. I'm just worried if it's not safe for work.
It's not safe for
if
work.
If that pops up on iTunes, people are going to be like, whoa.
It's not safe for work at all. I actually got it off of Facebook. Someone had that as their...
I thought the guidelines was as long as you can't see the areola, or the coloring of the nipple, you're fine. That's when it goes overboard into R-rated or high PG-13.
Sorry.
I think technically that is true, but...
Isn't that a weird rule? Like, really?
So one of my friends went to see a comedian and they talked about that.
Well, if you think about it, it's like, really, we're talking about an extra, like, maybe an inch of circumference that we're talking about. That's a very
important area.
I mean, it's a big area. Like, it's. I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but
he likened the profanity of the areola to a guy taking his own genitalia out and covering up the hole on his penis and saying, that's the bad spot. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, male nudity just doesn't happen, but it's clearly due to the movie industry and MPAA being heavily male dominant. Because some dude doesn't want to go into a movie theater and see like a 6 foot long penis on the screen, like in that movie Tony and I saw. Shit.
That really just came out so bad.
That's
just going to throw
it
out there.
Watchmen, sorry.
Oh, that was great. I knew where you were going with it, and I didn't correct you because, you know what? That would have been wrong to correct you. That was great.
Hey, this is Tony Gentilcore.
That was great. So that movie that me and Tony watched together with all the male
6 foot penis on the
It was like a half empty theater.
And then you couldn't remember the name.
Yeah. What was Tom Screws in it?
Wasn't that the best story ever?
That was pretty interesting.
Good story.
How good was last week?
That was a great episode.
That was a great episode.
He clearly wasn't using his headset, but I didn't obviously bug him about it. But He was obviously talking into the mic that's like built into his computer.
Oh yeah, yeah, I guess so.
But we literally spent half an hour on Skype a couple nights before, like trying to figure that out, and I'm like, whatever, it sounds fine.
Huh.
And he's not a big technology guy.
No.
So.
No.
So speaking of Megan Fox, Transformers.
F-O-X.
She looks pretty good in the new. I saw a clip of her.
You
with,
think?
With Shia LaBeouf on Conan on Friday.
You mean you find Megan Fox attractive,
yeah.
Kevin?
Shocking.
It's weird
Shocking.
Though. It's weird because she's like, when she was at the MTV Movie Awards, she looks like ugly.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't look hot. Like not what I would consider a woman to be hot. She looks kind of fake. Like she's manufactured. I don't care. You can fucking laugh, guys. Do what you want. Or fracking laugh.
Fracking. So anyway, ignoring Kevin's fail for a moment. Yeah, I mean, I was just saying that I personally, like, I don't want to find her attractive because that's so, like, played out fanboy, and she's gorgeous. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm going to close that picture so I don't click on it while we're watching the show. Or,
you'll be
the
watching
show.
The show?
You're going to do what while the show's on?
What kind of technologicals do you possess?
I think we're going to get really bad reviews for that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if we get bad reviews for profanity, I can't even think about what kind of star rating we would get for, well, I can't really
Actually,
say.
You know what? I think, Kevin, if you were wise and wisdomous, you might put up a little bit of a disclaimer, maybe some language inappropriate, viewer discretion advised. That's like those CD ratings that they had when you were a kid, so you would immediately run to that section and buy mm-hmm. whatever had curses
Dude, the
in
big,
it.
Big black
it's
label.
Why I bought the Snoop Doggy Dog album.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I bought the what's it called? The Rush Hour CD, but I got the the Rush Hour soundtrack, but I didn't get the official Rush Hour soundtrack. I got the what's that label that has like son of a bitch. It had like hold on, I'll find it right now. Let me put away my Nintendo DS for a second. Rush Hour CD soundtrack. It was Def Jam's Rush Hour soundtrack. And it was fantastic because it's the reason why today I know word for word how to sing,
but not how to speak
that Jay-Z song. Can I get a F? I can sing it word for word today.
That is something to behold.
Yeah. I think
and
that I would love
Ja Rule's
to hear that
famous hit. Bitches better have my money. Classic. Or anything from Cisco or Drew Hill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how Deep Is Your Love was on that soundtrack,
exactly,
wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I still have that CD. Or Blow Shit Up from Chris Tucker.
It was the FBI great. Wants so, you.
Yeah. The. That's a good movie. Who was I talking to? I was talking to one of my clients. I'm like, yeah, everything I pretty much know about, you know, China and Chinese culture comes from the Rush Hour trilogy.
Oh, well, then that must be true.
And various other Jackie Chan movies, because I've never been able to go to China. There's not many, like, American TV shows or movies that take place in China. So, Mission Impossible did, I think.
Well, all my knowledge of Tokyo comes from, you know, Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift.
Oh, how good is that movie? Like, that's such an underrated movie. Like, people really say that's, like, the worst movie in the series, but I think it's fantastic. I think it's a really good movie. Like, when you think about
I love the deep conversation on the rooftop while the people are walking the masses below. I learned a lot from that scene.
Well, how they're like all ants or something like that.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is so sad. Yeah. I enjoy I enjoy Fast and Furious movies.
Yo, Dad, this is my mess. And I gotta clean it up before I go back to Texas.
Oh wow. Oh wow, now this is officially the best off topic ever.
It's like, even though I got the whole Yakuza after me, Dad, let me handle this. And I'm not
even
gonna go
though
back
I have the whole Yakuza after me.
I'm serious. Like, he had dudes coming after
him. Wow, you've really watched that movie, Kevin.
I have it on DVD. I think I've watched it like almost 10 times. I also watched Back to the Future 2 last night for like the 300th time.
I'm not even going to get on a Back to the Future conversation.
Yeah, he did. Right? And then he bitched me out for not knowing when he writes BTTF 2 that's Back to the Future 2. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that we were...
And I never
WTF, Kev.
I like never watched part 2 because it's kind of the... I think it's the worst in the trilogy, but...
Yeah, it's my least favorite. The second one is my least favorite.
But it's good because there's... I was... Oh, this is really stupid, but I was going... Like, I was starting to watch the movie, and I'm like, oh, first they, you know, they go from... Our doc comes from 2015, comes back to 1985, so that's one trip that they travel through time. Then they go with Marty and his girlfriend from 85 to 2015... Then Biff goes from 2015 back to 55, then from 55 back to 2015. Then Marty and Doc and, I can't remember her name.
This is Jennifer.
And Jennifer, they go back from 2015 back to the alternate 1985.
Oh, yeah.
Then from alternate 1985 to 1955, then Doc goes from 55 to 1885, so you have eight trips through time in that movie. So it's by far the most trips through time in any of the series, because in 3 you only have from 55 to 1885, then into 1885 to 1985, then obviously Doc comes from, you know, we'll say like 1895 because he has two kids by then, to 55, then he leaves and goes back from 85 to 1895.
You also have to include Aini's short trip as well.
In the first movie, yeah. So
yeah.
In the first movie, you have Aini's first trip 1 minute into the future, and he obviously doesn't come back because he's just in the future. And then we have Marty going from 85 to 55, then from 55 to 85, and then Doc then leaves from 85 to go to 2015 because he thinks 30 years is a nice round number. So then you have 5 trips in the first movie. You have 8 trips in the second movie. And then you got, again, you got about 5 trips in the third movie, give or take. Because, you know, Doc.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is who you get your advice from.
It's not only that, but I own... the trilogy, and the trilogy box set that came out on DVD when I was in high school. So that was like five years ago, or 6 years ago. And then I bought all 3 DVDs again because they re-released them a couple months ago in single DVD form. So they all have their each individual case. And like the first movie also came with some extra stuff. Like it came with Back to the Future, The Ride on the DVD. So you could, you know, obviously you could watch The Ride from Universal Studios. You know, where, you know, then we really get into talking about how many trips through time, because there's like a good 6 or 7 or 8 in that as well. So it's quite a fantastic series. And I even own, I have one of the tapes somewhere of the cartoon series, that I bought when I was in high school, when like eBay just started. So,
you know that Sandra Bullock's highest rated movie was Speed and her lowest rated movie was Speed 2?
Makes sense.
Yeah, you know what that has to do with anything? Nothing.
Yeah. No, it's...
Which was the same thing that you just talked about for the last 5 minutes.
But think about it. Now, if anyone has any questions about Back to the Future, you can either go to Bob Zemeckis, because we're on a first name basis. I call him Bob, not Robert. And or you could come to me. It's probably a little bit easier.
I'm speechless.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for our 20-minute off-topic discussion.
Wow.
Hopefully this show's going to be 2.5 hours long. Hope you enjoyed it.
Wow.
I thought that was awesome. The way you bounce back and forth.